Welcome to WebAx, Practical Web Accessibility Tips.
WebAx.blogspot.com.
WebAx. Website Accessibility. Web Standards.
Hello, and welcome to WebAx podcast number 91, Game Plan, Lawsuits, and Events. This is your host, Dennis, once again, and I have Ross on the line.
Hey, Dennis, how's sunny California?
It's getting pretty sunny today, yeah. Yesterday was really strange. It actually rained in San Francisco, and in late June it rained, which never does.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but besides that, it's been real nice. Somewhat cool so far, so I'm liking it.
Yeah, this seems to be a great time of year for the Bay Area, I think.
Oh, yeah. June is great. But sorry I missed you in Michigan, man.
Oh, yeah, me too. You know, I got your email late. I have a backlog of email every day now because of writing and all that. So, wish we would have been able to meet it up, but another time, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, my schedule was booked with all kinds of stuff. If you saw my Flickr updates lately, I put a few photo sets up there that are kind of nice.
Oh, check those out.
From my trip to Michigan. Anyways, so what else is new? How's the book coming along?
Pretty good, actually. You know, it's strange because I feel like I just started, but I'm nearing the end, which is bizarre. So, the book is probably going to have about 15 chapters, and I'm on chapter 13.
Oh, great.
So I'm nearing the end. I'm supposed to finish my first draft through writing in a couple weeks, 3 weeks, I think.
And to reiterate from the last podcast, this is a web design book, right?
Yes, it's about how design happens on the web, or visual design on the web, kind of more from a holistic viewpoint. Mm. So there's a lot of, usually when people talk about design on the web, they're talking about how it looks, or maybe they might be talking about how easy it is for a site to be used. And then in some cases, some people refer to web design as the actual practice of kind of even building the site, like a front end sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the book looks at kind of a holistic view of design and what are the six needs that a design must address in order to be really successful.
Cool. Have you thought about a title?
Yep, it's called The Six Layers of Design.
Cool. Well, we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, actually just got the book cover concepts last week and kind of working with the artist on those, and so it's starting to feel real.
Yeah, that's exciting. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I noticed last week all of a sudden I was getting tweets from Easy Chirp.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, actually not even a week before I left for Michigan, AccessibleTwitter.com changed its name. So it's now called Easy Chirp. So if you go to AccessibleTwitter.com, it'll forward you there, or just go to EasyChirp.com. But yeah, so that was big, and I finally got around to writing a post about it on WebAx, but when I first announced it a few weeks ago, I got a lot of retweets and good feedback and stuff on Twitter, which was great. And then I got more feedback when I put the post. I got more retweets when I posted it on WebAx, so it was good to get exposure from the name change.
Yeah, definitely. And I read the post, so it was for copyright reasons. Is this just something you noticed and decided you should change, or did somebody approach you about it?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me that, but Twitter never really approached me and asked me to change the name. Or I think for two reasons. The site maybe wasn't quite big enough or more popular, you know, as some other, third-party apps out there. But also because, you know, it's obviously the service that it's providing is important, and it's something that Twitter isn't doing, and so I think they respected that. But yeah, there were other reasons for the name change. one reason is just it's shorter. The new name is just plain shorter. And another reason it's more generic, you know, for the everyday user rather than just concentrating on, you know, the word accessible, which we'll talk about more in a few minutes, but, you know, some people might not know what that is or be a turnoff to some people. So EasyChirp is just an easier name.
Yeah, I like it. You know, it's fun. EasyChirp makes me want to use it. So.
Yeah, but you know, there were like two updates I needed to do in the application settings on Twitter, and I wasn't able to update them because Twitter was in the name of the application, and they wouldn't allow it anymore.
Oh.
So even though I had the name, I couldn't do an app update. So that's kind of a related another reason. But anyhow, it's all good. Thank God that mess is all over. It was a little more work than I anticipated, but you know, I was preparing for it over a span of a few months, so it went pretty smoothly.
Yeah,
I'm still not happy with the server that it's on, though. The new server is pretty good, but the sessions are, the PHP sessions are timing out, and so I'll have an eye out for a new server. So if anyone out there wants to dedicate something, donate something in exchange for advertising, please contact me.
Ooh, I think that's a good opportunity. Somebody should take you up on that.
I hope so. It would be a ton of exposure, so.
Definitely. Maybe our friends at DQ Labs. Seems like that would be a good synergy.
Maybe. WebEx. Okay, let's move on. I want to talk about the accessibility game plan for a few minutes. Let's see. First of all, this was... I can't remember who originally brought this up, but Jared Smith had a session about it at the CSUN conference this year. And if you go to hashtag gameplan on Twitter, you could probably still find some of the old tweets talking about it. But basically, this is about the accessibility community rethinking what we're doing and trying to get accessibility exposed in a wider and more positive way, because I think everybody's realizing that, you know, for a variety of reasons, the word accessibility kind of scares people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, to kind of get away from that, and different ideas to do that, and at the same time, just help accessibility along and evolve. And so, somewhat recently, there's been a couple articles around this, and one of them was by Carl Groves, who actually does work for DQ. Well, what was that?
Sorry, I'm moving.
Okay. And then another one called Accessibility, Let's Put Away the Wrecking Ball. And so those are both really good articles. I highly recommend reading those. And it talks. That's by Neil Milliken. And so they're great articles talking about some of the issues and what we can do to resolve these issues.
Yeah, you know, I didn't follow those the hashtag. This was actually kind of, these two articles were my first, I guess, awareness of kind of these new plans, this new game plan, and I really liked them. You know, I guess it kind of reminded me of some things that, you know, I'm guilty of, and I think it is kind of some really clear barriers as to why, you know, people don't understand why accessibility is important. And I think, yeah, there is kind of a semantic thing where accessibility sounds maybe a little intimidating, and then just kind of people within the accessibility community, maybe behavioral things, you know, where there's a lot of shunning, but there's not a lot of, like, well, let me help you, right. Which I know is something that I'm guilty of, too. I'm like, oh, that, look at this website, it's horribly inaccessible, and then I'll just, like, leave, you know, like, you don't do anything to help, but I'm more than happy to criticize, so.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the points of the articles, is that you know, share some of your solutions. So, you know, instead of accessibility folks, you know, shunning other sites or practices, you know, but to not do that so much, but to say, hey, here's a better way.
Right.
And then, yeah, like, I don't know. I guess using a different term sometimes would help, like, universal design or inclusive design. I think maybe just using those terms, like, for certain folks would fly better.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book, oddly enough, is this idea that design needs to be reliable. And that's when I bring up accessibility because, and especially applied to the web, the idea of reliable design, meaning that the design can function regardless if you're on the most recent browser on the nicest computer or if you're on like a text browser or if you're using a screen reader, you know, the design should still serve its purpose. And so that's kind of the term that I've started to try and adopt other than accessibility.
Hmm. That's good. So you do talk about accessibility in your design book.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an important design thing.
Awesome. Yeah, so other takeaways from this discussion and articles are, let's see, well, to educate others, like if you go to, you know, a web camp or unconference, which we'll talk about more in a minute, or, you know, like a refresh chapter meeting or a UPA meeting, you know, to kind of share the knowledge and awareness of inclusive design. And another point would be, you know, practice what you preach. If you're making a website, you know, make it accessible. If and advocate accessibility groups and websites that are accessible. You know, one thing I'm a little disappointed in with the Easy Chirp is that, you know, more accessibility advocates aren't actually using it. Because that's, I think that's important. If you should, if you advocate accessibility, I think you should, you know, practice what you preach and use accessible technologies just as, you know, as a model.
Right, as a way to support.
Yeah, and support
inclusive design.
Yeah, but all in all, I think. You know, everybody is on the same side, and that we agree we need to maybe adjust some of the things that we're doing. So,
yeah, I think kind of, you know, my key takeaway from reading them was this kind of this interesting thing that's happening, and that, you know, promoting accessibility is such a positive thing. You know, has such a potential to impact the way people can use the web and access information and access these services. But maybe we could do more to kind of use that positive energy in informing people too, which is, you know, something that, you know, I think you do a lot better job of than I do. You know, accessible or Easy Chirp and the podcast certainly are, but, you know, I could, it reminded me that I should be more proactive about, you know, really trying to show people why accessibility is great.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. It's been a couple months, actually.
Yeah, I was just thinking
so,
that.
So, yeah, it's been a real busy spring, so I'm glad we were able to get together today on this fine Wednesday. It's hump day.
Right. And halfway through it, too, so Friday's getting closer and closer.
Well, for you it is. I'm barely getting started over here.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
I did get up early, though, and was able to watch some tennis, some Wimbledon.
Ooh, sounds fun.
I think Federer just lost.
Yeah, I don't follow tennis, so I'm not sure who Federer is, but that sounds like a travesty.
Well, he's seeded, like, number 3, I think. He used to be number 1, but I'm not too depressed that he lost.
Gotcha, you're not a big Federer fan.
No, I like Nadal. He's cool.
Okay, well, I will root for him as well.
Yeah, there's one American left, I think. So we'll see. WebEx. A couple good articles about CSS and accessibility lately. So, yeah, be careful with your CSS.
Yeah. You know, I read through these, and the first one that you found testing the accessibility of the CSS generated content. I love this article because it's such a good reminder that, you know, now that we have some of these cool things like, you know, CSS3 and pseudo selectors, we still have to be careful how we use them.
Yeah, and the article's good, and it takes you through all the different stages of the CSS development and explains how, you know, I guess screen readers, I guess, are the main case, and how it won't recognize some of that content. So,
right. Kind of. So what ends up happening is if you use a pseudo selector before or after, you could conceivably put content in through CSS, like a little help message, but that won't be read by all screen readers.
Right.
Which I don't necessarily know why you would do that. Maybe just because it's quicker. But I'm sure people have done it. I just don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why either. The only time I've ever used them would be like for a pipe or something, like a pipe character or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or maybe that the float fix kind of thing.
Yeah, I've done them for clear fix. I've done them for like a pipe, and then for clear fix. And then stylistic stuff where I'm adding a shadow after a box, and it's better to put it in through CSS than have an image in the page.
Yeah, and none of those things we just said, you know, are like content.
Right.
So be careful with that.
Yeah.
And the other article is this one about backgrounds, CSS backgrounds, background images, and accessibility.
So yeah, I just kind of talked about how there's these CSS techniques that people use that end up putting text in a background image. And then there's a lot of reasons that background images get turned off, such as like high contrast mode and that sort of thing. And I think this is particular with like image replacement techniques, where if you use a background and you switch to high contrast mode through Windows, it turns off the background, but doesn't the text doesn't end up showing up. So they said use font rendering if possible. If not, you can use something like Coupon.
Interesting. Well, that's a good tidbit right there.
Yeah.
So look out for that.
Be careful.
Okay, we have three lawsuits to talk about.
Yeah, all related to captioning.
Actually, I think I messed that up. The first two are captioning, but the third one's not.
Oh, right. And that's the most offensive.
So, by now you've all most likely heard about the CNN case. So, a nonprofit group in Berkeley, California, sued CNN.com for not captioning its online videos. So that was pretty big news a short while back. And on a related note, Netflix was sued for the same reason. What does it say? The National Association of the Deaf?
Yep.
Filed a disability civil rights lawsuit against Netflix. Netflix has captioned or subtitled their movies. Some of their movies. I think it's around 20%. But the deaf groups have contacted Netflix apparently repeatedly about doing more, and they haven't. So that's what the lawsuit is about.
Yeah, 20% is not very much.
Yeah, if 4/5 of my movie selection got removed off Netflix, I wouldn't be too happy.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So we'll see what happens with that. And the last one is just a recent article from Lainey Feingold on the JetBlue case. So that's still going on, where there's a lawsuit about the inaccessibility of JetBlue's website and kiosks. So I guess there's the next hearing is the July 22nd, and I quote the article, JetBlue has asked the judge to throw the case out of court, arguing that California's disability civil rights laws do not apply to JetBlue's website or kiosks.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty rude.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know how much more you can say.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that, to me, says we don't care about you, which is too bad, because, you know, I used to really like JetBlue, but not anymore.
Yeah, and it's funny, because I know other you know, airlines have been sued, and I'm not sure if those lawsuits have been resolved. If anyone out there knows, please leave a comment, because it'd be good to know the resolution of these things, because that, you know, that would change the course of action for JetBlue.
WebEx.
All right, let's talk about a few conferences and events and unconferences.
Yeah, those are always fun.
Yeah, so just a quick note about AccessU. What was that, like a month and a half ago? So I went to Texas for the first time. And, yeah, Austin was really cool.
That's what I hear. You know, I've never been there, but everybody tells me Austin is awesome.
I beat you there, man. So, yeah, it's a cool town. And the conference went really well, and I gave my keynote, and that went fine.
Yeah, is there any video online?
No, I don't think it got recorded, but...
Oh, no.
I do have slides. I'll post the link to slides.
Yeah, post, yeah. Really wanted to hear it, but it went well?
Yeah, it went pretty well. Yeah, I was so nervous the night before, like, I could barely sleep.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, but when I actually gave the keynote, I was all relaxed and stuff. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Every time I've never done a keynote, so maybe it's different, but the times I have done speaking and presentations, that sort of thing, I'm nervous up until the point I start talking, and then everything's okay.
Yeah, and it was nice to have a lot of familiar faces in the audience, so that was cool too, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You're a celebrity.
It was fun, and at the end I had like four or five giveaways, and I asked questions about my speech, like, and you had to answer the questions. It was pretty cool.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it was all good.
It's like a little pop quiz.
Yeah, that's what it was. But at the beginning, I warned the listeners. I said,
okay,
better pay attention, because I'm going to ask some questions at the end.
Very clever. I like it.
Yeah, it was good. And I also hit the Google I.O. So through WebEx, I was actually invited. I got a press pass.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I was able to go. I went the first day, so... But I wrote a WebEx blog about it, so if you missed it, go check it out. And then it talks a little bit about the conference and the accessibility goings-on. And you could there's links to the, five or six sessions about accessibility. And they had, like, a little accessibility area on the floor, which was cool. And they, they had, like, a Chromebook with the Chrome screen reader called ChromeVox.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I tried that out, and they had, like, three other, like, little displays, like, with an Android phone, and different stuff. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. Very cool.
Yeah, the Android stuff, when I looked through the post, that seemed the most interesting thing that caught my attention, just the idea of mobile accessibility, and that's really cool, kind of exploring that.
Yeah, and they were they were pushing the accessibility thing, which was nice, you know, and I really appreciate Google for doing that kind of stuff, but, you know, I don't know, Google is so, it seems like it's so siloed, it has, you know, accessibility issues in other areas, you know.
Right.
And a lot of their accessibility you know, fixes or resolutions are kind of more like the, they're not really built in, they're rather like bolted on, like adding their own screen reader on top of their operating system rather than playing nice with the ones that exist already.
Right. Yeah, what do they call that, like a monkey patch? Get the duct tape out and duct tape on a fix versus...
So, I don't know. I guess you gotta take the bad with the good.
Right. Right. It's good, you know, being how influential they are, the fact that they are showing interest and they care, I think that's good leadership. But they should practice what they preach, as we discussed earlier.
So, coming up events... I just posted a blog on WebAx about, and it's a great list, so check it out. July through December, accessibility events and unconferences and stuff all over the place. So there's a lot of unconferences, which is cool because we had a guest post by Jennison talking about the WebCamp or unconference. And yeah, so there's a lot of good events this summer and fall. There's a neat ARIA and jQuery hackathon in Toronto. That's worth a shout out. There's a lot in Canada, man.
Yeah, they got a lot going on.
So the website for the Accessibility Camp Montreal should be updated very soon. There's nothing on there now, but I talked to Denis Boudreau, and it's still going on August 26th in Montreal. The Boston Unconference is in September 17th. We got Toronto, September 24th. London, September 21st. Oh, excuse me, 21st to September. That's backwards. And then D.C., October 22nd. And Accessing Higher Ground is Colorado in mid-November again. Oh, yeah, another Canadian one in Ottawa, an unconference December 2nd. So try to make it to at least one of those.
Definitely. They all look good.
Okay, I know we're running out of time, so I just wanted to do a quick mention for a few jobs that, at the time of recording, I checked them this morning, are still listed and open. So there's a project leader accessibility and inclusion position at Scotiabank in Toronto, and an accessibility engineer position for Mozilla, which has been open for a little while, I believe.
That'd be a fun one.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't think you don't have to be in any one place. I think it's a few different cities that you can live in, or maybe even remote, I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me. There's somebody who lives near, in Livonia, in Michigan, who works for Mozilla, so I think they do a lot of remote workers.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's a pretty techie engineering position. And there's another one that's pretty techie, really senior, but looks like an excellent opportunity. Senior Accessibility Analyst in Washington, D.C. And this one requires a secret clearance for this job.
Ooh, you need to be a spy.
It's listed by New Editions Consulting, and I heard it's for DHS, the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, but interesting.
I'm not sure. So, but anyways, the position looks pretty heavy. Looks like pretty important. So, if you or if you know someone, please send these job listing to them. Well, that was another good podcast, Ross.
Definitely. We'll have to try and not miss a month this time around.
All right. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
You will find the WebAx podcast and blog at webax.blogspot.com. That's WebAxe.blogspot.com.